It's time for Ask Dr. Daria on RadioMD.com. Do you have a question? Tweet your questions to @ShareCareNow using #ShareCareRadio or email your questions to AskDrDaria@RadioMD.com. Here's Dr. Daria.
Welcome back. Dr. Daria here. I know you have your own questions about health that we don't always answer in our segments, which is why we have our Ask Dr. Daria segment at the end of every show. So let's jump right in. One of our viewers from Miami said, I recently read that researchers believe certain foods might cure Alzheimer's disease. Is this true? And if so, which foods do this and how much would you have to consume to get the benefits? Well, for one, large studies have shown that higher rates of dementia and a faster decline in dementia may occur in people who eat diets lower in saturated fats, may be worse in people who have worse diets, so people who have more saturated fats, higher trans fats, and cholesterol. And what you may be referring to was a study, very small study released last fall, and they did this on 10 patients. So really small, really early pilot. But it showed that in those 10 patients that were placed on this very complex program to alter their lifestyle and diet, 9 experienced improvements in their memory. So these patients were placed on very individualized diets, included eliminating simple carbohydrates and processed foods, adding in regular exercise, methods for stress reduction, and improved sleep. And some of them even received some supplements and hormones. So remember, these results are very, very exciting to hear, but they're still early. You know, however, the changes that were made for patients were healthy ones that we know would have a good impact on your overall health. So there's really no reason not to implement some of the dietary, exercise, stress, and sleep modifications that they did in this study. We just don't know enough to say if it will absolutely alter dementia, and we definitely can't say which supplements or what doses of them were beneficial. Another reader from Ohio said, does going to daycare or preschool have an effect on children developing allergies or asthma? Now, this has been kind of contested over the past years, but a recent study said no, it doesn't appear that going to daycare either increases or decreases a child's risk of developing asthma. Some studies showed that recurrent wheezing may be higher in children 12 to 15 months who are in daycare, but that's likely due to their increased exposure to viruses at the daycare and not asthma itself, nor does it necessarily mean that they're going to develop asthma. Now we have one reader, this is a question that I get asked a lot, said, how do I know if I've broken a bone? So as an ER doctor, we see a lot of patients that come in and they're worried about if they've broken something. So there's a couple of hallmarks that I look for. And those are, first of all, swelling. Now, if you've broken a bone, you'll often have extensive swelling. Think the size of a golf ball or an egg just along the side of your leg. Large bruising and significant pain. And usually the pain of a broken bone is so severe, you're not going to be bearing weight on this. So you're going to know that you're having a lot more pain than you would expect from just a sprain or other muscle injury. Now, if you have any of those above, I would suggest you get an x-ray. Of course, if you have any deformity that you see, like the leg or arm is bent, that's common sense. You're going to need to seek care. No matter what I also tell people is listen to your body. So if your pain is severe, that's the number one sign that I want you to have your doctor evaluated. And really, everybody knows their body best. So once you see your doctor, they'll likely do an x-ray if they think it's necessary. And in some rare cases, mainly in people who are adults, older adults who have really bad osteoporosis, they may need to do a CT scan, but that's usually not. Most fractures show up in healthy people on an x-ray. There are some fractures that may not always, so if in doubt, your doctor may elect to just put you in a splint to protect it anyway and follow up later. Remember, there are other injuries such as ligament, muscle, or tendon tears, and those won't really show up on an x-ray. So if your doctor thinks you have one of these, they may elect to have an MRI done either then or at a later date. Now, a mom asked us, what should I do if I think my baby is intolerant to cow's milk? So first of all, this depends on the age of your baby. You know, the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, recommends avoiding cow's milk until your child is 1 year old and before giving it at all. Just little babies can't digest cow's milk easily, and it lacks a proper mix of nutrients that they need. In addition, cow's milk can actually irritate the lining of baby's intestines, causing bleeding and anemia due to that bleeding if the baby has any allergy to it. So once your child is over one, he can drink whole cow's milk as long as it's alongside a regularly balanced diet, including a variety of solid foods. If your child's over one and still seems to not be able to tolerate cow's milk, I'd have a conversation with your pediatrician about his symptoms. Tell them what you're seeing, what the symptoms are, and they may decide that you may need to avoid cow's milk, but really discuss with them. The good news is that there are other options if they say that you can't have cow's milk. You know, the main benefits of cow's milk are for the calcium and the fat that they give. And you can get that from yogurt, cheese, and other calcium-rich foods if you really need to avoid it. Now, one of our readers asked about what are spider veins, and are they different from varicose veins, and are they dangerous? So we use these names, we often hear these terms used interchangeably, but they are two different things and slightly different. Varicose veins are those really enlarged veins you often see, like a bulging or twisted cord on your leg, especially in the back of your leg and the calves and thighs. Spider veins are smaller. They look a little bit more like a branching vein, just a bunch of branches in a bunch of different directions, and they often are found on the face or the legs, but often just a lot smaller. All of the veins in your body now have one-way valves, and that's to help to push the blood back from your heart, back to your heart, from your legs and your arms, especially when they're going against gravity, like you're standing. So you have those valves to keep the blood going in the correct direction. But over time, often lots of time on our feet, pregnancy, and obesity, those valves can get weaker, and they give out, and they cause the blood, instead of flowing directly back to your heart smoothly the way it should and efficiently, it causes it to pool in the superficial veins in your leg, causing what we call varicose veins. Now, usually for most people, the problem is just mainly cosmetic. In some people, they can be painful as well and even lead to ulcers. Now, in some rare cases, they could signal a dangerous blood clot deeper in the leg. Now, we call that a deep venous thrombosis, or DVT. Those are dangerous because those clots can break off from the leg to the lungs and cause a piece of it to cause a pulmonary embolism or a blood clot in your lungs. But that usually doesn't happen with the superficial ones. So if you've developed pain, ulcers, or any swelling of your leg, you should have your doctor evaluate you and make sure that it doesn't represent a DVT. And if your doctor rules that out, there are some options for treatment. Those typically start out with lifestyle changes. For instance, exercising, weight loss, elevating your legs, and really just not standing for prolonged periods of time in the same position. Compression stockings can also be useful and are available, you know, without a prescription, in many cases at a pharmacy or medical supply store. And if those don't help, you can talk to your doctor about other treatments, including injecting the veins, lasers, or other surgeries to actually remove the varicose veins. But I really like and suggest that people start off with some lifestyle treatments first to remove, to address why they developed the varicose veins in the first place. Now, this next question is something that one of my patients in the ER asked yesterday in addition to one of our readers, and that is, what does the gallbladder do and what causes gallstones? What can I do to prevent them? Now, the gallbladder is a small organ. It's just under your liver on the right side of your abdomen. If you reach up just underneath your ribs, you're going to be able to feel kind of that area where it is. Its function is to release bile, which breaks down fat. So gallbladders also can form gallstones, and we really don't know why they're formed, but we do know that certain people are at higher risk, and those are people who are obese, over 40, have diabetes, don't get into a lot of physical activity, even pregnant, or if you have a lot of rapid weight loss and weight gain and frequent fasting, like those yo-yo diets. So normally the gallbladder makes and stores bile, and then when you eat a meal with fat, it releases that bile into your intestine. If someone has gallstones, then when the gallbladder squeezes to release the bile, it's blocked by a gallstone. You know, think of blocking the opening of a tube of toothpaste and then trying to squeeze the tube. You wouldn't be able to squeeze it out. And for the gallbladder, that causes pain. And over time, if it's blocked, it can cause infection and inflammation. To prevent gallstones, you need to avoid the main risk factors for them. So stick to a healthy diet and weight. Get more exercise regularly. If you already have gallstones, but you want to prevent more attacks, avoid high-fat meals, and as these are what often trigger the gallbladder to release a large amount of bile. Think of fried foods, processed foods such as donut and cookies, whole milk dairy products, and fatty red meat. Also avoid crash diets, as that sudden weight loss can trigger worsening stones. Now, that's all that we have time for today. I'll be back next week to answer more of your questions. And in the meantime, feel free to tweet your health questions to our Twitter handle at ShareCareNow using the hashtag ShareCareRadio. Your question could get answered on the wet air. You can also follow me personally on Twitter for breaking health news at my handle at Dr. Daria, or check out my Facebook page, Dr. Daria Long Gillespie. It's Dr. Daria, and you're listening to ShareCare Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for listening, and stay well.